Good afternoon, may it please the court. Judd Lonis, registration number 33208, on behalf of John Sandoval. Prosecution had no eyewitness, no fingerprints, no blood, no confessions tying John Sandoval to the murder of his wife. In fact, there was no new evidence discovered between 1995, when the prosecution decided not to charge Mr. Sandoval, and 2009, when they finally charged him. In the absence of any real evidence that Mr. Sandoval murdered his wife, the prosecution convicted him with inadmissible character evidence and junk expertise. In particular, the expert testimony about the canine searches, the expert testimony that Mr. Sandoval had characteristics common to spousal murders and was statistically likely to have killed his wife, and the massive amounts of bad character evidence submitted at trial. I want to focus on these issues today. I don't get a chance to get to all three of them, but I'll answer any questions the court might have. I want to first address the testimony of G. McAllister, who testifies as an expert in the areas of domestic violence, dynamics, victim response, and offender behavior. Her testimony was specifically designed to show that Christina Sandoval was a victim of domestic violence and likely murdered, and further, that Mr. Sandoval was not only a perpetrator of domestic violence, though he had never hit his wife, but he was the very type of domestic violence perpetrator who was statistically likely to have committed murder after deliberation.
Mr. Lonis, if we follow People versus Cognac, does that resolve this issue, at least in this court?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. Cognac is clearly distinguishable for at least three reasons. First, Cognac dealt with an expert who testified about pedophilia and the characteristics of pedophiles. The court there reasoned that the behavior of pedophiles is not normally understood by the average juror. Here, what's at issue is an alleged spousal murder that is totally within the ken of the average juror. I mean, how so?
I mean, most people haven't experienced spousal murder, so how can you say that that's within the ken of the average juror?
Your Honor, people know about things they haven't experienced. They can watch them on TV. I would bet that five nights out of the week there's a Dateline NBC or To Catch a Criminal or some such show on TV about spousal murder. It's just the gist of any number of novels. I believe there was a very popular movie recently called Gone Girl about this very topic. It is absolutely something everyone can understand. The second thing is that Ms. McAllister, though purporting to be a blind expert, testified with uncanny ability about the correlations between spousal murder and attributes that, or characteristics or behaviors that the prosecution attributed to Mr. Sandoval. And it's very clear that she was talking about Mr. Sandoval, and the jury did not need the prosecutor to tell them that.
Wasn't that exactly what happened in Cognac? Wasn't that the objection in Cognac that the court rejected?
Yes, Your Honor. The one thing I note is that in People v. Snook, a Supreme Court opinion not considered by Cognac, the Supreme Court specifically noted that when an expert testifies, even a blind expert, about the characteristics of the participants in a trial, that testimony necessarily refers to the participants, and any juror would use it for that very purpose.
But Mr. Lemus, didn't the expert explicitly say that she was not talking about the facts of this case?
Your Honor,
because she didn't know about them. She said she had no idea what the facts of the case
right,
were.
Right, and that's just highly incredible. But anyway, it didn't matter because every juror who had heard the facts of this case and heard her testify would know that her testimony was referring to the facts of this case. Otherwise, why would she testify?
Well, there could be other reasons, but do we have to find that she was incredible as a matter of law when she said she didn't know about the facts of the case?
No, absolutely not. I mean, there could be other reasons. I haven't heard any other reasons why she might testify. I can't see what they possibly would be. You don't have to find they're incredible. The final distinguishing characteristics between this case and Cognac is that the prosecutor there never argued that the defendant fit the characteristics, fit the profile that the expert testified to. And here, that clearly occurred.
Where? Can you give us a record cite? I didn't see that. Where did she say that?
In closing argument, Your Honor. I've cited in my opening brief.
You're saying the prosecutor made that connection, not the expert?
The prosecutor, okay. Yes, in closing argument. And that was one thing in Cognac that the court noted that the prosecutor never did that in her initial closing argument. And here, they clearly did. In fact, the prosecutor testified, I want to discuss those correlations that G. McAllister testified about. Those correlations are present in this case. She said, McAllister testified, the largest majority testified majority of women who are murdered in this country are murdered by domestic partners. Of course, Mr. Sandoval was her domestic partner, her spouse. The prosecutor pointed it out. Ms. McAllister testified that a person who was threatened with a gun or whose partner threatened himself with a gun is 20 times more likely to die than any other domestic violence victim. The prosecutor argued that specifically in closing argument. She said, the risk of homicide increases more than 20 times when there are threats with a gun.
And what's wrong with that? I mean, we make decisions every day based upon probabilities. Well, why can't the jury do the same thing?
It's called 404A, Your Honor. It's a rule of evidence. It is a rule that forbids that type of evidence in courts of law.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that goes to my confusion about your argument. I thought in your brief you were raising an error under 702 or 403, but now you seem to be talking about 404. And so I can't figure out what is the nub of your argument. Which rule is at issue here?
Your Honor, I'm arguing that it's impermissible character evidence. It's very clearly stated in my briefs.
So you do not argue that it's a violation of 702?
Your Honor, I'm not arguing on appeal that the problem that she was not qualified to opine on this. Okay?
Do you argue that it's inadmissible under 702?
What's that?
Are you arguing that it was inadmissible under 702?
Your Honor, I'm arguing it's inadmissible. It's not helpful to the jury. But specifically, based on the treatises I cited in my brief, in Winkelried, Mueller and Kirkpatrick, McCormick on evidence, every single one of those authorities declares that this evidence is absolutely inadmissible. It's 404A. It's character evidence.
Any statistics you're saying is included in this blanket rule of exclusion?
There's an exception for DNA evidence, but otherwise it is a blanket rule of exclusion.
Mr. Lonis, I'm sorry. May I ask, what did the defense counsel object? What basis did the counsel object below in the trial court?
We objected specifically to the statistical evidence in the trial court.
On grounds of?
It was character and propensity evidence.
So you did not raise a 702 objection below?
We did raise a 702, Your Honor, we did raise a 702 objection below. We had a Schreck hearing on this. We objected to her testifying under 702. At trial, before Ms. McAllister testified on direct, the trial ended for the day, before the trial started the next day, we said, we understand she's going to testify about some correlations. We object. This is character evidence. It's inadmissible. Court overruled that objection.
But if it's inadmissible for that reason, that seems to be an entirely different question from whether it's helpful to the jury under 702. It may be helpful, but not admissible for some other reason. Those are different questions.
Indeed, Your Honor. And
so how is it not helpful to the jury, speaking only about 702, aside from the 404B problem?
It's not helpful, and 404A, Your Honor. I'm arguing that this is not just 404B, it's 404A, because she's saying this is his character. Under 404A, direct testimony about a person's character or a group of people's character from which the jury would infer guilt is adamantly inadmissible. No way, no how. You don't get to say he's the type of person who would commit murder, which is exactly what they did here. It's 404A. It's also 404B because she drew those inferences from prior bad acts, but it is 404A, and it's a very grave 404A problem. Now, and these are all, we objected to all of this in the court below. It's very well preserved.
Thank you.
So a fourth reason why Cognac is distinguishable. I said there are three, there's fourth, is because Cognac, the guy actually confessed to the charged crime. Here, there's no evidence. The dearth of evidence makes it particularly prejudicial, Your Honor. And the prosecution had...
When you say there was no... You say there's no evidence to convict this defendant of the crime?
Hardly any, Your Honor.
Really?
Yeah. Your Honor, this trial lasted 19 days specifically because they had so little evidence. Any attorney who's practiced criminal law in the trial courts of the state of Colorado will tell you, and they'll know, if the prosecution has evidence that someone actually murdered someone, that trial is done in a week. You don't need 19 days to trial a single victim homicide case. If you have a weapon, if you have a gun, if you have a means of death, if you have blood evidence connecting that defendant to the crime, if you have DNA evidence connecting to the crime, it's a simple matter to convict someone. They only resorted to this type of inadmissible character evidence because they lacked other evidence in the case.
Regarding what, the canine, what I don't understand what's wrong with that. Yes, they didn't have the other evidence. They didn't have the smoking gun evidence. And I guess you would say if you don't have smoking gun evidence, you just shouldn't prosecute?
You should prosecute, but you should do fairly. What you can't do is have an expert come in and testify why the defendant is guilty. You can't have an expert come in and say, oh yeah, because the defendant threatened himself with a gun once, that there's an 85% chance that he murders his wife. You can't testify about separation violence and that this crime fell within the period of separation violence. That Ryan v. State held that was inadmissible. Every treatise writer finds this type of evidence to be admissible. It is character evidence. Character evidence is extremely dangerous because jurors attribute too much importance to it, and it's not reliable. We don't say that someone's guilty because they're the kind of person who would have committed the crime. And that's exactly what happened here.
But that's not what the expert said. I mean, you're inferring that the jury then took the evidence and applied the expert's testimony to this defendant, but the expert never did that.
What else would the jury do with it, especially when the prosecutor's asking them to do it? I studied a case in my brief called People v. Dooley out of the Maryland Court of Appeals. Same situation here, blind expert. The prosecution was sort of making the arguments maybe you're making rhetorically to me here now, and the court said, who would not believe that the defendant fell within that group of individuals to which the expert testified? They further said only adult would not put defendant in that class of offenders. Only adult. I mean, I think you're just ignoring reality. You're ignoring the jury system if you say that the jurors would not have said defendant's the kind of guy who murders his wife based on the testimony at trial, based on the expert testimony, and based on the arguments by the prosecutor that explicitly urged the jurors to make that connection. I have just a minute left. Unless the court has any questions right now, I'd like to reserve my remaining time. Thank you.
All right. You have a minute and 27 seconds left. Thank you.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. Carmen Morales on behalf of the people. My attorney registration is 34852. I would like to begin my presentation by pointing out to this court that this was not an ordinary first-degree murder case. The victim's body was never found. The jury trial lasted 19 days, and the prosecution presented large amount of evidence establishing defendant's guilt. I would like to focus my presentation now on the domestic violence expert testimony issue, but I will be happy to answer any other questions you might have on the other evidence or any other issues raised by defendants. My understanding is that at trial, the defense objected to the expert testimony on grounds that his testimony or her testimony was not relevant. I know that later on they also objected on grounds that it was character evidence.
So to clarify, when you're referring to the first objection, that it was not relevant, that was at the pretrial Shrek hearing?
I believe so.
And then at trial, with more specificity to the statistics evidence, that was on character?
Yes.
Okay.
That's my recollection. The testimony, in this case, this was about domestic violence. One of the theories of defendant, if you can gather that from the closing, is that this was not a domestic violence case. Defendant was simply a stalker, had nothing to do with domestic violence. He did not engage in domestic violence with the victim in this case. So the testimony of the expert was relevant for many reasons, and her testimony specifically on the statistical correlation between intimate partner homicide and stalking was relevant in this case and was very useful to the jury, particularly now in light of the cognac, because educated the jury on a pattern of behavior that is, I think, beyond his normal experiences. Most people are familiar with physical domestic violence, like I say in my brief, the wife punching, the husband punching his wife, but there are other types of domestic violence, the sneaky ones, more like psychological, mental, and in this case, the stalking, that I don't think most people are familiar with it. So I guess in this case...
Counsel, take the suicide leading to murder, because there was there was some statistics cited by the expert that if there's a suicide threat, it increased greatly the chances then of a murder. Can you tell us specifically how that is admissible independently of character evidence?
Well, I think it all goes in a domestic violence context. I think it explains the progression that takes place in domestic violence crimes and also shows the escalating nature of the harm that occurs. And statistics are just, you know, data gathered based on studies across the nation. Even if there is a suggestion or an inference of that character, I think our case law is clear, following Spada and other our Supreme Court cases, Snyder, I think. Spada doesn't require the absence of that inference. All it requires is that inference exists a permissive purpose for the admission of that evidence.
But that's other act evidence. This isn't other act evidence.
I understand. This is again in part of the testimony talking about documentary evidence, statistic in the country about domestic violence. But again, because it shows something else than propensity, it kind of explains, again, as I said, the progression of domestic violence crimes, the escalating nature of these crimes, and what's going on, even if there is an inference of that character. I don't think it should be.
Ms. Moraleta, I guess I'm a little confused about whether you agree that 404 applies to the expert testimony at all. And usually, 404 applies to evidence of the defendant's character. She didn't mention anything about the defendant. So why does 404 apply to her testimony whatsoever?
I think I understand your question. I was confused myself. The thing is that they're talking about whether it was relevant. Of course, testimony about domestic violence in a domestic violence case was relevant. But they raised the issue that it was character evidence. So that kind of brings in the law on 404B.
Right. So what is your position? Does 404 apply to her testimony? Or does it exclude her testimony?
No, I don't think 404B applies because this is not character evidence.
Because it didn't refer to the defendant at all.
Yeah, exactly. She testified. I mean, again, she didn't know the victim. She didn't know the defendant at all, and she did not make any connections. Now that brings me to defendant complaints of the prosecution. I would have defendant fit the characteristics of domestic violence offender. I don't think, I mean, I have already closing arguments. I don't think that's what happened here. But even if the prosecution committed prosecutorial misconduct, that wasn't raised by the defendant, that doesn't mean that the evidence somehow becomes inadmissible. Those are two separate issues. And there's no prosecutorial misconduct raised in this case.
All right. Can you address then, because I think we were acknowledging before that one of the objections was based on relevance. So let's go back to Rule 401. So the statistical correlation evidence, you were saying this was a blind expert and the testimony had nothing to do with the defendant whatsoever. So then how was it relevant under 401?
How was it relevant? Well, because the domestic violence expert, as an expert, is provides the jury with, documentary evidence or explanation as to how domestic violence crimes happen. And again, it provides information regarding certain behaviors that, again, are beyond the normal experiences of most jurors. And also, the other thing that is relevant in this case, again, as I said, defendant, one of his theories was that this was not domestic violence. And they explained that sometimes domestic violence includes not only physical violence, but stalking and other behaviors is relevant because it tended to prove that this case was about domestic violence.
Let me ask you the same question I asked Mr. Lonas. Is cognac dispositive of this issue?
I believe so. And I think I have briefed all this possibility in some aspect. And cognac was about profiling. And the court distinguished Salcedo, in which the Supreme Court said that profiling evidence is inadmissible as substantive evidence of guilt. And in cognac, also the expert was provided testimony on sexual assault offenders. And the court said there's a difference between introducing that evidence to show character or a propensity to commit a crime. And a different reason is when the expert provides testimony explaining behaviors that, again, are beyond the normal experiences of jurors. And that's what the court concluded in that case. It was the evidence was introduced for the other purpose. It educated the jury. It helped the jury. It was admissible.
And can you discuss how statistics in cognac were similar to statistics here, such that cognac controls?
Okay, I remember that in cognac there were also numbers and the statistics. I don't know if it was the same kind of the statistic, but I know the expert testified regarding in a certain number of cases, most of the offenders know the victim, and in a certain number of cases, the victim is not going to report the crime. I have to apologize. I don't remember the specifics, but it was very similar enough for this court to make the analogy and apply cognac to this case. Does the court have any other questions about any of the other issues?
I do. Can I take you to the Fourth Amendment question? The denial of the motion to suppress.
Yes.
Related to the court, the police's warrantless entry into the house to arrest him, the defendant. I have a very specific question. In your answer brief, pages 18 and 19, you discuss in order to show that there was probable cause to arrest for a crime related to the disappearance of this victim, forget about the old trespass. You list via bullet points a lot of facts which you say that the police knew before entering the house without a warrant. What's confusing to me about your brief is you have a few cites to these bullet points, but mostly you don't cite anything. So I don't, did this evidence come in at the suppression hearing, at the trial, or both? And if both, do you have authority for our relying on evidence at the trial to support the trial court suppression ruling?
All that evidence was evidence that was presented at the suppression hearing, not the trial, because we know this court has to rely on the evidence presented at the suppression hearing, not the trial. That was evidence known to the police before the entry, and that was evidence that was elicited at the suppression hearing in this case.
Okay.
And I believe, I know that some of my, each of those bullet points at some point, if I don't provide a record site in there, I know that somewhere in my brief, I provide a record site for all the information that the police.
But your representation is all of these facts were based, or as you present them were based on evidence presented at the suppression
hearing? Yes,
okay,
yes.
Okay, thank you. That was my question.
Is the probable cause determination for a search warrant different than probable cause for arrest in terms of the quantum of evidence required?
I don't really know. I don't have the answer to that question. I don't think so. It's all based on an objective test based on what the police knew at the time. And I don't think there's a difference in between the quantum of evidence that the police.
I mean, here a search warrant was issued. Is that right? And this was after the defendant was arrested?
Yes, that was after. Yes.
And as I recall, some of the information in the affidavit or the application for the search warrant included some observations made during the warrantless arrest.
Yes.
But doesn't the independent source doctrine require us to excise the information that was obtained by the allegedly unlawful arrest and determine whether or not there was nevertheless sufficient information in the warrant to support the warrant?
I think you are correct. I mean, I think under the independent source doctrine, if there was sufficient evidence to support the warrant, that's all you need. But in this case, I guess the people's position was that there was probable cause for the police entry based on the victim's disappearance. And then, of course, there was probable cause for the arrest. And then independently, there was probable cause for the arrest regarding the trespass, which is a different issue.
Well, the trial court's order was a little strange. I mean, what the trial court's order said was that there was probable cause to arrest based upon the earlier trespass. And then the next paragraph of the order, it says, and there were exigent circumstances because of the risk of destruction of evidence. And it wasn't clear whether the two were tied together in any way.
Yes, you are correct. I guess my understanding is that the trial court concluded there was probable cause for the trespass and then also destruction of evidence. But as I think I argued in my answer brief, this court can affirm or a party on appeal can support a judgment on any grounds supported by the record. And that's our next.
But in this case, wouldn't this alternative ground, that there was probable cause related to the disappearance, doesn't that require factual findings by the trial court? I mean, wouldn't we need to remand if we agreed with you on that point, that raises a question?
As to the probable cause for the disappearance?
Yes, whether the facts here, whatever the facts are, established probable cause to arrest based on the disappearance of the victim.
I don't think this court needs to remand in this case because the record is very well developed, and that's what happened in Ramirez. Our Supreme Court said, the records were developed. We can make that determination. There's no need to remand. And I think this court should do that in here. It's a very well-developed record. There's no need to remand.
And in Arnaz, did they have issues such as inevitable discovery?
I think Arnaz, I don't remember that. I'm sorry.
All right. So given that we do have that issue, can we do fact-finding on inevitable discovery as well?
Fact-finding on inevitable discovery. I think this court can affirm on the other grounds, but if it decides to use its discretion to do so, we can definitely do that. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. The people request that this court affirm defendant's convictions.
Your Honors, in Ryan v. State, cited in my brief, the court found that expert testimony showing that subjects of a study tended to commit homicide when faced with the prospect of separation invited the jury to group defendant among those subjects and by this method determine conduct.
Mr. Wattis, before you run out of time, I do want to ask you a couple questions regarding the Fourth Amendment issue.
Yes, Your Honor.
Does it make any difference under the Fourth Amendment whether the police said he's being arrested for the earlier trespass if in fact the court is able to find that there indeed was probable cause to arrest him for murder?
By the court, you mean this court or the trial court?
Either one.
That was essentially in something that the trial court impliedly found was not present.
Why do you say that?
It certainly found there's no prob, it certainly made no explicit finding that there's probable cause to arrest for anything having to do with Christina Sandoval. In fact, it just, it relied entirely on probable cause for this, for the rearrest for this felony trespass.
But that doesn't mean there wasn't probable cause to arrest for murder.
I suppose that's true. I believe that if the court, the district attorney, consulting district attorney said there's no probable cause for arrest, that was during the proceedings while they were, the cops were communicating with the district attorney, they repeatedly said there's no probable cause to arrest. The prosecutor relied on the old warrant rather than probable cause. The court relied on the old warrant rather than probable cause. I don't think this court can affirm on that ground. Firstly, because there was no probable cause to arrest and go in the house. And secondly, because the trial court, it's simply not something addressed by the trial court. I don't think.
If we disagree with you, or if we agree with you that there wasn't, that the probable cause on the trespass wasn't sufficient, mm-hmm. combined with anything else to get them in the house, and then we look at the question alternatively whether there was probable cause to arrest for the murder, for the homicide, mm-hmm. do you think we need a remand on that question, or can we decide that question based on the record as it is?
I do not believe you can decide that based on the record. And I've cited the cases in my court. If you trace that affirm on other ground rule back to its origins.
Right, you cite a case in your plot brief that says we should remand if we want before addressing that question.
Yeah, I mean, if you trace it back to the roots, it's a footnote in the U.S. Supreme Court case. And they simply say, we can do that, but if it's really not, the court's really not subjected to factual findings of any sort, it's not something that's prudent for a court appellate court to do.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Your time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. Thank you both, counsel, for your excellent arguments.